Let's go around the NFL in the Loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
The fellas are out today. Luke Morrow alongside Chris Partee filling in instead, but we'll still go around the NFL nonetheless. Of course, the big story last week was the Micah Parsons trade to the Packers from the Cowboys.
How about that?
In case you didn't hear about that. And then the Cowboys turned around over the weekend and they gave Deron Bland a contract extension. 4 years, $92 million extension with $50 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Do you think the Cowboys almost like hurried to get that deal done after the Parsons deal to show like A, hey, maybe we have a plan, or B, to give their fans something to be happy? Like, do you think the two are connected? Two are related?
Knowing Jerry Jones, probably not. But fair. I think maybe that does just in an almost an unrelated way give fans a little hope, or say that, no, we're still going to spend money. Now, it's not nearly as much money as because Micah Parsons got 4 years, 188, I believe.
Yeah, right.
I forget how much guaranteed.
They just gave Bland half.
Exactly. They essentially gave him half of what Micah Parsons got, which is, you know, sounds about right for the position. For what he's done, he's been hurt a little bit last year, whatever, or the year before, whatever it was.
Last year, yeah.
But he also has a Pro Bowl, All-Pro year under his belt as well, where I think he led the league in interceptions or something like that. So he's a good player, don't get me wrong, but he's not Micah Parsons. He's not.
What were your impressions? Dak Prescott did say, the quote was, he was glad a solution was reached. I don't know if he was glad. Like, I don't know how you interpret that, if he thinks it's better to have him away from the team, like on another team, than to have him there being unhappy and not actually be playing with the team. I don't know. Anyways, Dak said, are you truly glad a solution was made, even if that solution is sending him to a competitor in the conference?
It's politician Dak.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what that is. That's politician Dak.
But I know it's kind of old news now, the Parsons trade. It's been talked to death, but since we haven't been on air together then. What was your impression when Parsons, when you got the news that he was actually being traded to the Packers?
I just said, here go Jerry and again. Now, I told you this during the break. Before the whole deal came out about the back and forth with Micah Parsons' agent.
Yep.
And how Jerry Jones claims allegedly that the agent told him to shove their offer where the sun don't shine.
Yeah.
Before that, before I knew about that, I thought what everyone else thought. Oh, he's going to wait until week one, just like he did with Dak last year, I believe. And we're going to hear on week one. They got the deal done. Or the week leading up to week one. We're going to hear, they got the deal done. But once I heard that, I'm like, damn. Because Jerry Jones has a huge, we all have some type of ego, but Jerry Jones has a huge mega ego.
Yep.
And I do believe that that ego got in the way again. I really do.
It was shocking to me as well. The biggest problem for me was the fact that it was the Packers, that it was in the conference, that it was a competitor, that it's a team that knocked you out from the playoffs last time you were there.
And a team that over the last 10 to 12 years usually beats the Cowboys in the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
Send even when Aaron Rodgers was there.
Yeah.
Send
them to the AFC and not have to worry about it. But this might be
Send them to Antarctica.
Yeah. Do that too.
Otherwise known as the Jets or somebody like that.
This might be the contrarian in me, but honestly, from the Cowboys' perspective, I didn't really hate it. Now, I wish they got another first-round draft pick, but you save all that money. I think the Packers really overpaid financially for Parsons.
Think so?
Yeah, I mean, he was on the Cowboys last year. The defense still wasn't great, and it's not like the Cowboys have won anything with him. Like, I think you need more than just that one player on defense. Yeah. You need more than that one player on a team. Yeah. And so to make him the highest-paid non-quarterback ever, I don't know. We'll see how that impacts the Packers. They got plenty of young talent on offense, so they can afford to put that into Parsons for the next 4 years.
Is it possible that, because the Packers have been a lot closer more recently than the Cowboys have to getting over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he could be that one piece, or they look at it as he could be that piece to actually get us over, to help us get over the hump? I mean, he's only the second player in NFL history to start a career first 4 years with at least 12 sacks.
Yeah. No,
Reggie White's the other.
I have no problem trading for him. I just think it's an overpay, and like, you could give him all that money.
But I mean, let's be honest. Most players are overpaid for nowadays.
Well, to a certain extent, you're paying for sure.
Outside of maybe a legit franchise quarterback, you're overpaying most times for a lot of these positions. You just really are. You kind of have to.
Yeah,
if you don't, someone else swoops in.
Yeah, but that's fine. Again, I mean, football, as we know, I mean, you got to have 25 starters. So yeah, you can't devote all of your resources. It's the whole thing of, like, no quarterback. I think maybe it finally did happen, but quarterback has won a Super Bowl making more than 18% of the salary cap. You know, you can't devote too much of your resources to one player, even if it's the quarterback, because that usually keeps you from filling out the rest of your roster when you have enough depth throughout a long season and enough talent to actually go win a Super Bowl. So I think I have no problem trading for him. I think the contract is too much. I wouldn't give that contract if I was the Cowboys. And then you get only two first-round picks. I would have loved a third.
That was my thing.
Because we know it well here in Houston. Like, again, you get three first-round picks for Deshaun Watson, turn this franchise around. The Cowboys, 35 years ago, got three first-round picks for Herschel Walker, turn the franchise around.
And they also got a couple thirds. And
yeah, they got a bunch of picks.
Now, if you don't get the three first-rounders for Micah, okay, throw in a second and a third. Throw in something else, not just one player. Now, Clark is a good player. Don't get me wrong. He's a Pro Bowl defensive tackle. But he hasn't had the impact so far in his career of a Micah Parsons.
No. He's also older.
Yeah, that too.
He's going to be 30.
Yeah, that too. A few years older.
A few months. And he was a Pro Bowler 2 years ago. Yeah. He had a bad year last year. We'll see if he bounces back.
Yeah.
But if you're the Cowboys, I thought the Cowboys were not going to be very good this year.
Already.
Yeah.
I think most people
I think this was a good way to kind of restart, to reset. Trade away Parsons, which is tough to swallow, but you get draft picks, you get to save that money, and now you can try to rebuild because I think they need more help than just having Parsons on defense. But we'll see how it plays out.
But you got to see what they do. We got to see what they do with those draft picks.
Yeah. It might turn into nothing. And they might not spend the money in the right places, right? But at least this gives
Jerry
you an opportunity.
It's Jerry Jones, man. It's Jerry Jones. So there's a large possibility that they may just screw all this up.
For sure, which is always the case. The Texans could have done the same thing when they traded Deshaun and got those picks. And, you know, they could have drafted Bryce Young and whatever else.
How close was that, right?
Yeah, maybe he was, you know, if the Panthers happened to take Stroud and the Texans were stuck with Bryce, we might be sitting here saying, like, oh, you know, the Texans still need a quarterback.
That's true.
Still strength. So you never know how it works out. Hey, as we continue to go around the NFL, the Bills defensive tackle Dwayne Carter is going to be out for the year after tearing his Achilles.
Damn.
He was the third-round pick for them last year. He was going to play a pretty big role on defense. You might not know Dwayne Carter if you're listening driving around today. That's not why I threw this story in here. It's just because I've been saying this for a while, and now I know it's becoming more of a popular take, but I think there is a epidemic here in recent years with these Achilles injuries. I never remember hearing. I know Dominique Wilkins dealt with it 30 years ago, but growing up, I never remember hearing a ton of Achilles injuries, and now the last, like, what, 5, maybe 10 years? Everywhere, every sport, these Achilles injuries have become like the most, that's become like the new ACL, the new blowing out your knee is this. Achilles injuries.
I think you're right. The Achilles, I mean, you can go back. What was Kevin Durant, 2019?
Yeah.
That he did his? I mean, it seems like since then we've seen a string, whether it's basketball, football, you know, whatever. The Achilles, I haven't heard it put like that, but the Achilles might be the new ACL or blowing out your knee. Because we just see it so frequently, too frequently.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I don't know why it started. Even friends of mine who are not professional athletes
are tearing their Achilles.
Yeah, playing tennis or playing pickleball. And I was like, I never heard of anybody I knew or like my parents' friends ever tearing their Achilles when I was growing up. And now I have even my friends are suffering these injuries. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah, because as a kid, you know, like you just mentioned, you know, I grew up as a kid mostly in the 90s, and I don't remember a ton of... I remember the ACLs or, you know, MCL something with the knee.
Yeah.
More than like, especially with football. But the Achilles, not as much. And it's, you know, like you said, over maybe the last 10 years or so, it seems to have crept up a lot.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I don't get it.
I haven't seen a really good theory. I know some people say the shoes have changed over the years, so you don't get the same support.
For basketball, I've heard that. Because a lot of the guys wear low instead of mid or high.
Uh-huh.
And you can get that. But
so I've heard that.
I don't know about for football, though.
I know. I know there's this theory, too, that most people say most Achilles injuries happen when the guy first takes a step back and then tries to explode forward.
Yeah.
And that's like a new move that we're using, especially in basketball, where you take that step back to gather yourself and then explode. And when you push off so strongly, you know, the Achilles goes. So I know that's a theory. Baseball, like Mike Soroka tore his twice as a pitcher. And I think same thing, like trying to cover first base, pushing himself off the mound.
But sometimes there's a lead up to it when they have the soreness.
Yeah, right. Like Durant.
Like Durant. Yeah, I forgot. Durant did have that. But yeah. What's my guy in Indiana that just had it in the finals?
Tyrese.
Yeah, he was dealing with it leading up. And then in game seven, he just goes down. And when he fell, I immediately knew he was done.
He's done for the year,
rest of the year.
It's become so common now. We know what it looks like.
We just know what it looks like.
That's an Achilles.
And the way he banged on the floor and cried, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's done.
Yeah.
Because he knew he was done.
Well, it was also it was calf strain.
Yeah, that's the lead up. The calf strain is kind of the lead up to that.
We saw it with
the gateway to the Achilles.
The gateway.
Not to get off sport, but Jake Myers had a calf strain as well. He probably just tore his Achilles.
Yeah, when he had to walk off the field that time during the warm ups, I think that was everyone's thought was the Achilles.
Because it's a very big thing. It's that same movement. I feel like every time I hear about someone's Achilles tearing, it's that same movement where they take that aggressive step back. I thought that was a great point. I'm not saying that it's the cause. I'm not a medical expert, but that's just the one continuing.
It's a theme. Yeah.
It's the injury I fear most. I get when I hear about it and I think about it, I get like the chills.
Yeah.
I do not want to ever endure that. It just sounds.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, it sounds nasty. 832 said, I ran track in high school in 2005. One of my teammates blew their Achilles when launching to start the 200.
Yeah.
832, another one said, more people are trying to stay active in life, equaling more injuries. Yeah, maybe. For the non-professional athletes like my friends, but I don't know if I'd also say later in life. We're pretty young.
Later in life.
And also,
that
again,
person's like 16 and just said it.
Also, again, like I don't remember my parents' friends, let's say, growing up, having those injuries, my friends are now,
and maybe they were happening more. We just didn't know about it. I don't know. But as far as in terms of like pro sports, it feels like you didn't see a lot of it 20 years ago.
Oh.
30 years ago.
No, Dominique's the only one I remember.
That you can like big
from,
time
like, pre-2000s.
Yeah,
and then I think a quarterback. There was a quarterback back then, a good quarterback. Anyways, it doesn't matter. And then Kobe more recently.
Yeah.
Was another big one.
But even then, that was like 2016, 17, somewhere in there.
And now it just happens all the time.
Oh, no, 2015 maybe. Yeah.
And then after that, he started wearing more mid-high top shoes after
that. Yeah.
As we continue to go around the NFL here real quick, Shiloh Sanders said that if a team doesn't pick him up, he's going to go into music or modeling or acting.
I mean, he's...
I would love to see that.
He's got a lot of doors open to him. I think someone will pick him up at some point. Maybe not right now, but I think someone will pick him up at some point. At least give him a shot on a practice squad. Now, maybe he don't want to do that. I don't know, because he does have a lot of options, being the son of Deion Sanders. So he'll have options to do other things if he wants, because he has a following already. He's not just some kid that, you know, was because he wasn't drafted, right? He was a unsigned draft pick. Right. Or undrafted signee. So, yeah, he's not just some kid coming out of, you know, Colorado or wherever, and no one knows who they are. Everyone knows who he is because of his last name. So he'll be fine.
How about the fact he was fined by the NFL after getting released by the Bucs because of that punch he threw in the preseason game?
I mean,
salt in the wound.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that would happen to anybody else too. So I'm not saying it's unfair. I'm not gonna say that because
it's just bad timing though.
You brought it upon yourself. You can't lose your cool like that.
Yeah,
you can't. Now I know he saw his daddy fight Andre Rison as a kid, or maybe he wasn't born yet actually, because that was a long time ago.
On YouTube.
But he's seen it on YouTube at least. Deion was Deion at the time.
Yeah,
there's a difference.
Yeah, sure.
You ain't even close to that level yet.
Yeah, so, you're trying to make the team.
Yeah, you just
can't be throwing punches in preseason.
Yeah, he was on his way to winning a Super Bowl with the Niners that year. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it being a big reason for it.
Right. I think that's one of the bigger complaints for the Sanders kids.
What?
Like, they can come off very arrogant like their father, but Deion at least earned it where, especially for Shiloh, you know, like he's not even in the NFL now. I don't know if another team's going to pick him up. And Shiloh's not as...
You don't think he'll get picked up this year sometime?
I mean,
maybe practice squad? I think someone will give him an opportunity. I do.
Yeah.
Now, what he does with it is on him, but I think somebody will.
I'd give him a chance. He's a hard hitter, too, which I like.
But
old school.
But he can also... He can still model. He can still do music. All these other guys do.
It's true.
He can do all those things. He can do a podcast.
Yeah, everyone has a side hustle nowadays.
Hey, you got to, man.
Yeah.
It's expensive out here.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
Gotta have a side hustle.
That's Around the NFL. Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Speaking of NFL talk, when we come back, it's game week. So we're looking ahead to the Texans and the Rams already. When we come back, are the Rams the best or the worst week one matchup for Nick Caley and these Texans? We'll talk about it next. It's in the Loop.
It's Labor Day. H-Town, live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios. In for In the Loop, here's Luke Morrow and Chris Partee.
We even got our own intro. That's big time.
Love it.
Yeah, y'all would have heard it earlier if I wasn't being a doofus. But
it's all right.
Actually, it wasn't me being a doofus, just technology.
I didn't think it was.
That's right.
But you got it in there for us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
Always blame someone else. That's always a good move.
Right? Yeah. technology. Yeah. It was technology. This
damn technology.
That's what we're going to go with.
Yeah. If only technology was an actual person. Well, there is AI.
Kind of is, though.
Can I just blame AI?
Yeah, do that. That's a good route.
Always find anyone to blame. Are the Rams the best or worst week one matchup for Nick Caley and the Texans on Sunday? Before we get to that, I did miss this earlier, and I want to bring it up.
Uh-oh.
Our question of the day.
Yes, another one.
Last hour.
Another one.
Was, what's the most underwhelming debut in your life? What's something you were really excited for, but it ended up being a big letdown? Because we asked this after Arch Manning's debut over the weekend, and you can continue to text the show, 713-572-4610. But I missed this from Rob on YouTube, where his answer to the question was T. Mills mac and cheese, which has gone down in the 610 folklore.
Wow. Yep. Talk about Tyler?
Yeah, worst debut, T. Mills legendary mac and cheese, he said, with legendary in...
damn, why y'all got to do T. Mills like so that? When y'all got to do my dog like that.
Okay, well, Tyler's not going to be in today. But next time I see him, which will most likely be tomorrow, I'm going to ask him about his mac and cheese.
I need to get the story behind this.
Yeah, it was. I think Lopez was the one that had the big issue. If I remember.
Oh, really?
I think so. But it was hyped up, and it was just it didn't live up to expectations.
Man,
which is again, that's
don't do my dog.
If you
like
take
that,
anything
man.
from this question or this conversation, it's. What we already touched on, like just always keep expectations low, so then you're always pleasantly surprised
temper
and never
them.
Disappointed.
Temper
yeah.
your expectations.
You can't come
please.
In bragging about your mac and cheese or your signature dish because you just build expectations up way too high, and then you have to meet those expectations.
And it's usually going to be hard to meet those expectations if you've already built something up, anything.
That's right.
It's always going to be tough.
Rob also said in regards to my sinner's take that I am a movie hater.
Hating ass Luke.
Yeah. A lot
in
of people,
the flesh.
That's right. A lot of people do say I'm a very tough, and I acknowledge it.
Tough critic?
When it comes to movies, I am a tough critic. Movies and stand-up comedy. I'm a very, I
really?
Guess maybe just entertainment in general.
Just,
tough
know.
Critic. I am.
Do you use the excuse, it insists upon itself?
It insists
no.
upon itself.
I've never said that
if
in my
you
life.
Know what, if you know what I'm referencing, then you know. Family Guy whenever they're in that little Peter's like I did not care for the Godfather. It insists upon itself.
Whatever that means is what it does.
No, I'm not
hilarious.
That, yeah. No. I don't consider myself to be some like, you know, like real artsy or be
some aficionado
no,
of
I'm not.
Film. Not even movies, but film.
So I give my simple breakdowns. But no, I thought Sinners was terrible. Also, I do like this theory from the 281. Crossovers were the go-to move back then, so hence knee injuries. Now, the step back is the move, more vertical movement leading to more torn Achilles.
Okay, for basketball.
Yeah, for basketball.
But, I mean, that doesn't explain football, though.
And even baseball.
Some
in baseball.
Or, hell, I mean, I'm sure it happens in soccer. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it doesn't explain the...
It's happening everywhere.
Yeah, it's happening everywhere. But that is a good one for basketball, at least.
Yeah.
Because back in the day... You're a little bit younger than me, but do you remember when everyone was trying to do the Allen Iverson crossover?
Of course.
The Carey crossover. And
yeah.
After he crossed up Jordan in 96 in his rookie year, that first time they faced.
Yeah.
Second time, maybe, whatever.
We used to mock our basketball coach because in practice,
Would he do the crossover?
He will to show us, you know, for our dribbling drills. Like, okay, between the, and then he'd call it the killer crossover. And he tried to do
well,
it.
Well, see, that was Tim Hardaway.
Oh, okay, well, then the Tim Hardaway, the killer crossover.
And it was a different crossover than...
Either way, whatever Mr. Walsh was trying to do...
Mr. Walsh!
He was no athlete. In his, like... Probably, wait, I think he was still in his
coach.
Dockers. Yeah, I mean, it was. This was pre-high school. This was like, you know...
Like middle school, like...
Okay. Yeah, like parents are just coaching.
I got you, okay. Yeah. Mr. Walsh.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mr. Walsh. I don't know, but shout out.
Mr. Walsh is a clown. No shout.
Oh, come on. Stop it.
Luke.
Hey, Luke be hating for real, for real.
He's probably a nice guy. I don't know. Are the Rams the best or worst week one matchup for Nick Caley and the Texans? I ask this because, obviously, Nick Caley came from the Rams.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is going to be the first regular season game in which he's calling plays in his NFL career. He's never done it before. So, do you think the familiarity with the Rams hurts or helps Nick Caley? Because not only is he familiar with the Rams, but maybe Sean McVay or that offensive staff also familiar with what Nick Caley will want to do.
That's where I was going to go. Because, yeah, you could also you could look at it from the point of he's going to know that defense, right? Because he's coached against it as far as practices go and helped game plan, things like that. Now, they have a tough front seven, the Rams do. But
oh, yeah.
To take the other side that you just brought up there, they're probably going to know some of his tendencies because that's where he learned. Mm-hmm. Is under Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to lean more towards, and based on the talent that that defense has, especially that front seven, led by Jared Verse, I'm going to go that this is the worst matchup. I'm going to lean towards worst. I really am.
Yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, the answer to the question is whoever you think has the advantage in this. And I don't know how big of an advantage. It's tough because for Nick Caley, he's never done this before, so you don't really know what to expect from him. He might throw all sorts of curveballs. Like Sean McVay might have an idea, but then Caley runs a completely different style than McVay or what McVay's expecting.
I get
right?
it, but here's the thing. Most of these coordinators, especially first time out, they're going to take from what they've learned.
Yeah.
Because they don't really have much. They're going to at least base it off of what they learned in their most recent stop, and that was the Rams. So I'm going to lean towards this being the worst. Now, I can't remember. Matthew Stafford's out, right? Or is he playing? I can't remember.
It hasn't been decided yet. I think he's anticipated to play currently.
Okay.
But it is up in the air. The first injury report hasn't come out yet.
That's obviously going to factor in.
Yeah, for the game itself.
And how healthy he is on top of that.
Yeah, that's a big thing. It's a back injury. That's not going to go away. Jimmy Garoppolo's been banged up too, the backup. So either way, I don't think they'll have a healthy quarterback.
Good old Jimmy G.
Yeah. I think the answer for me, though, is how much Nick Caley tries to be like Sean McVay. Now, when you listen to Nick Caley at the podium, he sounds to me just like Sean McVay. I listened to his press conference on these airwaves last week, and I thought, all right, no, let me flip that. I listened to them play Sean McVay's press conference on these airwaves. And I thought, is this Nick Caley or is this Sean McVay? They sound a little bit different in terms of their voice, like the depth, the bass of their voice, but they talk exactly the same way in the same style in their
cadence.
And they talk really fast. Yeah, and they're, you know. And so it just depends how much he wants to try to be like Sean McVay. The closest comparison I think we could point to in football, because the amount of examples, is always the Bill Belichick coaching tree. And those guys always go somewhere and try to be just like Belichick. So, and Caley obviously was also in New England. So if he's going to be try to be just like McVay, then obviously Sean McVay is going to know what's coming. If he tries to throw some curveballs at him, then you might be able to get the Rams off balance. But if you go back and you look, like Nick Saban always dominated his assistant coaches. Bill Belichick always dominated his assistant coaches that became head coaches. So I think historically, that teacher, the head coach, they always seem to have the advantage. They know their pupils better because, yeah, like you said, I mean, they're the ones teaching them, and those assistants that move on just take whatever they learn from, in this case, Sean McVay, try to apply it elsewhere. So, of course, who knows that better than Sean McVay? History tells you, probably a disadvantage for Nick Caley on Sunday, but I think it just comes down to how much he's going to try to be like Sean McVay.
And it may not even be a conscious effort to try to be. It may just be what's kind of been ingrained in him the past few years being with the Rams and on that staff. You know what I mean? He may base his offense off of what they did. Now, obviously, some of the plays may look different, but I mean, just, you know, something simple. Like, there's only so many receiver routes to be run, right? So, I mean, some of the plays are probably going to look similar to what the Rams run as far as offensively. Running play, same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only so many plays, you know, different things you can do.
Yeah.
You can switch them up. And
it's like in music. I mean, there's only so many chords. Eventually, some songs, some guitar riffs are going to sound similar. Yeah. It's obviously a big spot for Nick Caley. First game, he's never done this before. On the road against a good Rams defense. And then you have that familiarity component. So that's why I think it's an interesting question this week, because it could either be a big advantage for him as he tries to get his feet under him, or it could make an already tough job even tougher on Sunday, when it's going to be like the 2002 Super Bowl, where the Bucks knew what was coming from the Raiders because Bill Callahan didn't change any of the signals. And John Lynch in the secondary is telling his teammates, like, oh, this is the play they're about to run. And they picked off Rich Gannon like five times. And the defense was the MVP.
They knew. And years later, guys like, Lynch, the safety, would talk about it and say, we knew what was coming.
Yeah. What a dope Bill Callahan is.
Even when they audibled, we knew what was coming.
Yeah, he didn't change the verbiage from when John Gruden was there the year previously.
And I believe they were even on the field defensively. You know, like, yeah, right. Derek Brooks and guys calling out, this is what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, they knew everything. It was like they had the answers to the test the day before.
Imagine being on that offense, and you're looking and like, they're calling out exactly what we're about to do. Just imagine that.
I would be like, how do we make it all the way to the Super Bowl with this doofus as our like head coach? This.
But you know, those Raiders had that early 2000s Raiders, they had a stacked team.
Yeah.
They were offense and defense, they were stacked.
And they could have actually won the Super Bowl if they threw some curves at the Buccaneers instead of just doing exactly
Gruden
knew was coming.
Yeah.
And then Bill Callahan never coached again as a head coach in the NFL.
No.
A reason. Yeah. By the way, just getting back to the question of the day, someone on the text line said the Lance McCullers come back this year.
Damn.
Biggest disappointment. And 936 said Tyler was hyping up his mac and cheese for weeks.
Damn, they own Tyler Dome right now. They own his head.
Yeah, it's a big talking point.
Next time
building.
I see Tyler, I'm going to have to ask him about this.
He still defends it.
He still defends his mac and cheese?
Yeah.
Damn. You know, I'm sure it was actually pretty good, but maybe he hyped it up too much.
Exactly.
Maybe he hyped it up too
much. Didn't meet the expectations. Hey, when we come back, what's popping? We'll let you know, including a big return for the Astros this afternoon. We'll get to that next in the Loop.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
What's popping on In the Loop? Well, according to 832 on the text line, they said, I thought this was the drive with all the hating going on.
Hate.
Yeah. Let's just not bring up any more movies, and then, you know, I won't be hating as much.
The SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
Oh, my goodness.
Who would waste their time? what's popping? Luis Garcia makes his return today for the Houston Astros. 110 first pitch. He's going up against our dear old friend Kikuchi for the Angels.
Coming up here.
Astros are trying to split the series instead of losing the series. What are your expectations for Luis Garcia? He has not pitched in the big leagues in 28 months. What do you think we can reasonably expect from Garcia today against the Angels here this afternoon?
I mean, again, temper expectations here.
Yeah.
You have to. I know it's maybe a cliched answer, but, you know, I think if he gives you five innings of, you know, decent work, you know, doesn't get lit up in terms of giving up runs, maybe gives up a few hits, then you're happy with that. A couple strikeouts, you know. But as long as it's not, you know, he gives up seven runs in three innings, something like that, then I think you're happy.
I think five innings would be great.
Yeah, I think if he can give you five decent innings, yeah.
We'll see. I'm not expecting. It's kind of like McCullers. I said before the start of the season, anything you get from Lance McCullers this year is just gravy. Don't expect anything from him. He hadn't pitched in 2.5 years, you know? And so similar here. Luis Garcia hasn't pitched in about 2.5 years. Anything you get from him this year, it's just the cherry on top. I wouldn't expect anything from him. As long as he gets through five, doesn't get shelled today. Like, even if he gives up three runs in five innings, but kind of looks the part, has a few strikeouts, stuff looks okay, then it's like, all right, that's a good debut after missing almost 2.5 years in the big leagues.
I mean, baseball is tough to not do it for over 2 years and come right. It's not like getting on a basketball court where a lot of times guys can come back and they kind of just resume as, you know, as they were a lot of times. Baseball, you got to kind of, that's why guys do, you know, their minor league dates to try to ramp up to get ready. But even then, when you get back, it's tough to just come right back in and start killing it with baseball.
Yeah.
Especially as a pitcher. And it's tough.
Garcia's done a big minor league ramp up. He did nine rehab starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of an example. I also said this. I mean, the McCullers conversation was very similar. And I was saying this at the time. Like, I can't think of any pitcher who missed back-to-back years and then came back and had the same career pitching-wise. Liam Hendricks has tried to do it. It hasn't worked out as a recent, another current example. The only other one was Mike Hampton around 2000. I think he missed 2 years. And I think that was after his time in Houston. I got to look this up. But Mike Hampton is the one guy, and even he was, I think he only lasted like another year or two in the big leagues.
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Yeah, Mike Hampton.
Man.
I'm looking it up here. Yeah, he missed 2 years, and then, oh, no, he didn't. Never mind. He didn't pitch well. He came back and had a 5 ERA the next 2 years, including 2009 with the Astros at the age of 36.
Man.
So, yeah, anyways. I can't think of an example of a pitcher missing 2 years, coming back, and just picking up where he left off.
Yeah, and baseball is that sport where, I mean, I think most people would agree that baseball is the toughest sport. As far as, like, the major sports in this country, baseball is the toughest to get out there and actually be really productive. Now, imagine missing almost 2.5 years. Well, you said, how long?
28 months.
28 months, so almost 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And coming back. Temper expectations.
For sure.
Now, if he comes out and looks great, then, hey, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
But don't expect that.
Velocity's been down. They changed his arm slot, kind of like McCullers, to put less pressure on that arm. And so that's brought down the velocity, also kind of like McCullers. So as you watch him today, if you do watch him or you see the highlights, right, velocity's been even further down, like low 90s, around 91. We'll see what he has against the Angels. Astros lineup is out. Pena leading off at short. Yordan batting second in left field. Right. Altuve hitting third. DHing. Correa is your cleanup hitter and manning the hot corner. Christian Walker batting fifth, playing first base. Yiner is behind the plate and hitting sixth. Urias batting seventh, playing second. Cam Smith batting eighth and playing right field. And then Dubon rounding out the lineup in center field. That's the starting nine, so nothing too big there that stands out. Pretty typical lineup as they try to get the bats going.
Nothing out of the ordinary there.
No. And try to get the offense going. Didn't score yesterday. So, and Kikuchi today, you know, he's faced them already this year, pitched decent, and he's having a pretty good year. So
I think most of us just expect them to get it on track as far as the hitting goes, especially with having Yordan back, although he has a lot of these teams aren't really pitching to him so far since he's been. He's not seeing much to hit, I should say. In terms of
drawing a lot of walks.
Yeah, drawing a lot of walks. But you just got to think at some point this offense is going to turn it back on.
I think so. I was going back and I responded to Ocho on the text line earlier.
Ocho,
I agree with Ocho that they do have a bad approach. This team, they've seen the fewest pitches of any lineup, any team in the league this year. After doing that last year, and they said they were going to be more patient this year, and they started off April a little more patient, but no, they're not. They're a bunch of free swingers. And it's not a great approach, but with that said, again, entering August, they were 12th in the league in OPS as a lineup. So this offense has been productive. Let's not be prisoners of the moment. It was a terrible month of August, even though they added Correa and Yordan just came back. But the larger sample size has been more successful than the more recent smaller sample size for this lineup. I expect them to get it going.
I mean, you just don't want this slump to continue for too long.
No, you can't afford to.
Because we are getting closer and closer to the postseason.
Yeah, 979 says the Astros have scored 14 runs in the last 7 games. I expect a poor offensive output today.
That's crazy. 14 runs in 7 games. That is crazy.
Yeah, brutal. So Luis Garcia makes his debut this afternoon. We'll still be on the air when he takes the mound. So we'll be able to see in real time and bring it to you how he looks right off the bat. But it's a big return, another big return after what you got this weekend from Javier and Arrigetti already for the Astros. Now we throw Garcia into the mix and, you know, trying to make this rotation deeper. From his debut to another, Bill Belichick.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Making his UNC debut tonight. First game as a college football head coach. You looking forward to it? You going to be locked into the game tonight watching UNC?
Yeah, I'll be getting some work done later as well, one of my other gigs, but I'll have it on. I'll be tuning in a little bit. I just want to see what his team is going to do. I just want to see what they're going to do. I pretty much know what his demeanor is going to be on the sideline because we've seen it for, you know, 30 some odd, actually longer than that. But, yeah, I'm interested to see what happens in this first game. I really am.
Yeah. UNC has like a whole, obviously, anytime a new coach comes in, it's a whole new roster, whole new staff. Yeah. TCU is bringing back more than half of their starters, including their quarterback. So we'll see. It's not an easy matchup for the Tar Heels tonight.
Question.
Yep.
I forget her name, but is the girlfriend on the field, on the sideline at some point in this game?
Ooh, I think she'll definitely be there. I think she will be on
camera.
She'll
be there. She'll be on camera, but will she be on the field, on the sideline at some point in this game? Maybe they're winning late. She comes down last couple minutes. Like, do you think she's on the field at some point? I think she is.
So is it going to be like a Taylor Swift thing? Like every time it's going to
You know what? It might be. It might be.
Maybe.
Is this game on ESPN? Or?
Yes, it's on.
It is.
On ESPN.
Then they will definitely find her in the box.
Yeah.
As a
wherever college, she's at, they're going to find her.
As a college football like guy, like I love college football. Yeah. It's already
aficionado.
It's already like an interesting matchup because that's TCU, UNC, you know, it's very different.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
As the chaotic person in me, Bill Belichick.
Man. Ooh. Hey. I think most football fans in general are intrigued and interested to see how this is going to play out for him.
For sure. But do you think people are going to tune in to root for him or root against him in this whole scenario?
I think a lot of people root against him.
That's a good question, though.
I think they'll root against him.
I think most people root against him.
Unless you're a Patriots fan. Other than that, I think you're probably going to root against him.
I think it's similar to Deion Sanders. I think Deion has a lot more fans. But I think a lot of people tuned in to watch Deion to see like if he was going to fail or if it would be a disaster. And I think it's similar, but even more so with Belichick, where I think more people are going to watch UNC this year just to see if it is going to blow up and be a disaster.
You know, you make a great point, by the way, because a few years ago, guess who Deion debuted against?
Yeah, they
TCU.
Killed him, right? They beat TCU as a big underdog.
TCU was ranked.
Yeah, which was a
they
joke.
Were. Yeah.
It was after a joke. They finished the year like 4-8.
Yeah.
TCU.
Yeah, and then I don't know why they were ranked that high to begin with because they lost a lot of their starters or graduated.
They lost everyone.
Yeah, the thing is, though, you can't take it away from Deion that he beat their ranked team to begin his, on the road.
Grain of salt.
To begin his college career.
Grain of salt.
Yeah.
Hating again.
Speaking of college football, Lee Corso made his final appearance on Saturday for College Game Day. Record ratings. They said 5.1 million people watched like the ending,
that last segment,
which is a record for College Game Day. Honestly, I have to admit, I didn't tune in. I haven't even seen the video. I haven't seen anything from it online. I do like Lee Corso, so this is not me hating. I just I was busy, and it's not something that's gotten me to the TV.
Yeah.
But I don't. Did you see it?
No.
Yeah, you didn't see it either. Yeah.
I did not.
You better well know I seen it.
What were your thoughts?
It was very emotional. I don't know why. Yeah. I was like, no one
shed a tear.
No, it's just like, dang, this guy though has been a staple on people's televisions in the fall before college, you know, football starts that Saturday.
Yeah.
And fun fact, all the teams he picked went perfect. All the teams that he played for and coached for went perfect.
Yeah. How about that?
In fact, he was the only person on the panel to pick Florida State to beat Alabama, and guess what? Florida State won.
Yeah, but his logic was just because that's where he went, right? Isn't that his alma mater? I think he went to Florida State. Was it Lee Corso? Who was it? Somebody went to? They were like, are they the same age? Him and Burt Reynolds? Is Burt Reynolds younger? Somebody went. They were like roommates with Burt.
Well,
Reynolds.
Florida State. Lee Corso.
Makes sense. Yeah, so I mean, that's why he's picking them. But I will say, Lee Corso, for the headgear picks his whole career, he was correct about 67% of the time.
That ain't bad.
I feel like that's really good. He's not picking against the spread, but still, they're picking like the biggest game of the weekend, so you would imagine it's typically a toss-up.
Oh, yeah.
To pick the winner for college football 67% of the time over however many years he was doing that, 30-plus years maybe?
And Lee Corso is 90 years old.
Dang.
Goodness gracious.
That's pretty impressive, though, that he picked. He did have so much. I saw the clip last week. He was the only guy that picked Vince Young in Texas in that Rose Bowl against USC 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Props to him. So he had success picking those games over his career. I will say, if you want to call this hating, whatever, I do think it's a few years past due. I was always worried that he was going to say something that was going to ruin
His legacy?
Yeah, kind of like Gil Brandt, if you remember, who has passed away, unfortunately. But he was on NFL radio until like he was 90, and he said something that ended his radio career. And it's like, ooh, that was a bad look.
And especially in the climate we have now.
Yeah, I think it was something racial that Gil Brandt said. And
that gets you off real fast now.
And if you've watched Lee Corso the last couple of years, like he didn't really seem to be all with it. It was almost felt like bad, like mean that they were even putting him out there.
Coming up, going right up to the line sometimes.
Yeah, you know, so I was like, oh boy, like I don't want this to end poorly for Lee. Like let him.
And you know, a lot of times,
ride off on the white horse.
When people get older, especially that old, they just don't care what they say, even if they're broadcasting.
Yeah,
they don't care what they say.
Yeah.
If it hurts your feelings, so what?
Yeah.
so those things happen.
I'm glad we had a good ending for Lee Corso's College Game Day career. Last thing real quick. Northwestern didn't let Tulane wear uniforms to pay tribute to those affected by Hurricane Katrina for the, let's say, 20-year anniversary. Anniversary feels like a weird term to use. Lame. Northwestern was the road team anyways. The game was being played.
Wait, so they didn't want them to wear...
They didn't want them to wear all... They had these all-white uniforms. Yeah. And Northwestern, because the road team wears white, I guess, Northwestern's like, no, we don't want to make that adjustment.
Man, that's whack.
Seriously.
That's whack.
Some things are bigger
than football. Why does it matter?
And then Tulane stomped them 23-3. So
well, good. That.
Yeah. Stupid Northwestern.
Yeah.
And talk about, you know... highfalutin, you know, pinky out, good academic school.
Definitely.
Northwestern, those nerds
Chicago,
up there.
Chi-town.
And I say that with my knowing my uncle works for Northwestern, but good. I'm glad they got curb stomped Saturday.
Curb stomped.
Yeah. Well deserved. Hey, that's some of what's popping around here. When we come back, The Athletic put out a list of the 25 most intriguing players and storylines entering the NFL season. Did the Texans make the list? And who would you say is the most intriguing Texan for you this season? You can always text the show, 713-572-4610. We'll talk about it next in The Loop.